Hello everyone. Today I'm talking to Sarah Kaus, founder and chairwoman of Swell. Yes, there was fashionable water bottles that you might own one or two or three of, or at least have seen or heard of. We think it's a fascinating brand elevation story, an Uber brand story, in that here we have an object, an empty bottle to be filled usually with water that should be a commodity, and Sarah has turned it into a premium brand, into even a social marker and a badge, and was a pioneer of creating what is estimated to be around an $8 billion industry in the US alone. So we're going to talk about the why creation story, the what is it all about, how does the equity evolve as well, and the how did she go about creating this, and also talk about the future. She'll even share kind of her vision of how to go forward with them, not only with the brand, but also in her own involvement. So we hope you'll enjoy this podcast. Oh, one more thing that I nearly forgot. The sound quality, particularly ironically on my side, might not be very good because this was our first podcast recording using Zoom. The COVID crisis came and we had to switch almost immediately to that medium to reach Sarah. So please forgive us if the sound quality is not tops. It's not tops with our podcast in general. It's a hobby rather than a profession, but you might hear a little bit of a delay from time to time. Please forgive us, and we're going to try really, really hard going forward to markedly improve the quality of our sound. Promised. Enjoy nevertheless.
Please listen carefully.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Uber Brands podcast, a podcast on how to build brands that seduce rather than sell, that add myth to the material and shine from the inside out, as Wolf Schaefer and I like to say. This is your host, JP Kuhwein, and today I'm delighted to welcome Sarah Kaus to our show. Sarah is the founder and chairwoman of insulated bottle and container brand Swell. Thank you for joining us, Sarah, today.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
And I know it's kind of improvised from the province, quote unquote, so let's hope that the Wi-Fi will hang in there. Now, for those who don't know about Swell, and I doubt that there are very many people left, but nevertheless, let me give you kind of a 15-second summary. Swell markets a reusable, insulated, and very chic, I have to say, water bottle that became kind of a de rigueur iconic fashion accessory in the early 20-teens. I certainly remember a lot of these bottles popping up at meetings in our office in New York City at the time. In other words, it was one of those pioneers in transforming what is quintessentially a commodity, a bottle that holds water and other liquids, into a desired brand. So you can imagine that this is just the kind of case study that Wolf and I are very keen in, to analyze as we study what drives elevation of products to brands and what it means to create meaning beyond the material. In fact, here we can talk about a total category transformation or even creation. It is estimated that about $8 billion worth of such bottles have been sold in 2018. They continue to grow even now, so many years on, at about 3-5%. And it's guesstimated that Swell holds about $150, maybe $200 million share in those sales, even though it's privately owned and we won't know whether that's true. But it is certainly a significant player, is what I want to say. Is that a fair summary, Sarah?
It is. And I love that you're giving Swell some credit for creating the industry, because I also like to take some credit for that trend. I love to hear those numbers.
Absolutely. No, and that's why we have you on. We like to talk to the pioneers who were there at the very beginning. I want to thank you not only for being on the show, but also call out that you and your marketing team around Kendra Peavy volunteered to participate in working with my students at NYU and Columbia. So a big thank you for that. I think you even volunteered to do it again next year. So that's an added benefit, really, to have you here.
We've enjoyed working with the students, and in fact, we're putting some of their advice into action. So it's been beneficial for both sides.
They noticed that, and they were really excited about that, about the agility and about having that impact. To get us started, maybe let's start a little bit before the beginning of SWELL. Can you tell us a little bit about life before SWELL and maybe the indicators that would make us understand how you got to this idea?
Sure. So I grew up in a small town in Florida, Jupiter, Florida, for those who know it. And lived along a river. My parents were really into the outdoors and recycling. We were the first to recycle on our street, even before we had curbside pickup. My parents really taught me the importance of, you know, thinking about the natural environment and making sure that we, you know, as participants, were helping do our part in preserving that. I left Florida. I went to the University of Colorado at Boulder and did my undergrad work. And for those that don't know Boulder, it's a very beautiful mountain town where people are outside hiking and really being one with nature. So it's hard to spend 4 years in Boulder without coming with a little bit of influence of the natural world. You know, from there, I actually went and my first job was a CPA working for Ernst & Young and worked in audit and tax and got a great experience in a range of industries, everything from manufacturing to consumer goods, financial services, hospitals, media companies. It was a good, introduction to business early in my career. But I was really unfulfilled because I didn't want to become an accountant and stay, you know, counting somebody else's books. I thought that there was something bigger for me. So I took some advice from some of my clients. I went off to Harvard Business School and got my MBA. And, you know, from there, I did some consulting. I did commercial real estate development for a number of years. And I really wanted to start my own business, but I just couldn't think of an idea that was big enough. I really wanted to have, you know, a positive impact on the world. You know, I wanted to do something I was passionate about, but I couldn't think of something. And then one day the idea came and, you know, for the last 10 years now, it's been all about this idea about creating a reusable water bottle that only looks better, works better, is good for the planet, it's good for its people. And it's really been sort of my singular purpose in my life and in my career ever since then.
And it's being said that there was some kind of event at Harvard that kind of caused this eureka moment of that's it. Is that true?
There was a number of things that happened. I went to my 5-year reunion at HBS, and there was a professor there that talked about climate and climate change and how areas of drought and we're only going to become harder hit over decades and centuries. And I was reading a lot at the time about the water crisis and about how almost 1 billion people on the planet at the time didn't have access to clean drinking water. And primarily that affects women and girls because their job is to, you know, drop out of school or, you know, not participate in a vocation outside of the home because they need to go fetch water for the family. And so when I learned that not only was the water crisis a real crisis, but that it would potentially become worse because of climate change, I started thinking about like, what could I do to potentially raise awareness about these two individual things that I was becoming conscious of, you know, being both really big problems, but being one person and not knowing what to do about it. And then fast forward a few months later, you know, I'm on a hike with my mom in Arizona on a hot day. I take a drink out of a water bottle and I just had this moment where I thought I could marry these two things together. If I sold a product that educated people about the water crisis and made, you know, a donation back to, we work with UNICEF, you know, basically someone that's working on this issue. And by the way, it's a reusable product that's better for the environment. If I could attach these things that I'm thinking about and reading about and sort of use the bottle as sort of the educational tool that's really a consumer product. So there was sort of that eureka moment. It was probably months in the process, but it coalesced all together, I would say, you know, from a couple of moments, you know, one being the Harvard presentation and then one just being, you know, open-minded on a hike one day.
Right. And I like that you show it's usually not that 1 second where all of a sudden you have the idea. It's kind of boiling there for a while with all these influences of outdoor activities, being worried about the water problem, mm-hmm. wanting to be an entrepreneur. It sounds like all of these things came together. Now, nevertheless, the idea of selling a bottle, and I talked about this in the intro, you know, the ultimate commodity. It's not like we don't have bottles around. What gave you the confidence that you would be able to pull that off? Or did you actually waver a lot? Was it difficult to stick with it? Or what carried you through to believe in this so much that you thought it's going to be successful?
You know, I really believed in it because I wasn't concerned that there were so many other bottles on the market, a commodity, as you say, because I was really trying to create something much, much different. So I wasn't setting out to compete with the bottles that were being sold in sporting goods stores or camping stores. I wasn't trying to compete with those, you know, those plastic bottles with a squirt top or something with a carabiner on the top you'd attach to your backpack. I wanted to create a fashion hydration accessory. I wanted something that was beautiful, that the customers would covet, that it was more performance minded, it was functional. You know, it keeps ice cubes overnight, it keeps your hot coffee warm until the next morning. You know, I was really thinking about creating a product that customers would covet and would actually purchase in completely different sales channels and, you know, different packaging, different price point, different mindset than the way that they would have consumed a water bottle in the past. And so I think that gave me a lot of confidence that I wasn't bogged down with really even worrying about what any of the competition was doing, because I thought, and hopefully what was correct, but I really thought I was doing something that was so unique and so different that nobody could catch up with me because I was really making a pivot to go in a different direction.
So this element of fashion and design and looks and making that a very desirable part of it, that was there from the very beginning. That's actually a key ingredient, it sounds like.
It was really a key ingredient in the business, but I can tell you that one of the early lessons that I learned was I needed to bring that front and center even more than the mission and the sustainability piece. So, you know, I've been mission driven and the product is always given back from the beginning. But I found that the more, especially in the early days of building the brand before we were household name, I really needed to make sure that the product was beautiful and it was covetable and had great photography. And when you came to the website, you knew we were selling a product. Because previous to that, my first version of the website, it was all about statistics. It was all about how much recycling ends up not recycled. You know, it was all about Great Pacific Garbage Patch and plastic in the ocean. There were very depressing statistics about, you know, people that don't have access to clean water. And then over here in the corner, I was selling a product, right? And even your students, I'm sure, would come in and rub their forehead and say, no, this is not how you create a top brand. So, you know, in the beginning, it was all about the fashion and it was all about the functionality, but I really had to think about how do I tell the story in a way that I can convince consumers to buy and consume. And by doing that, they're doing something good, but not beat them over the head with all of these depressing statistics about how overwhelming the problems could be.
And it seems that in the analysis that they just did, the students, and when we looked at the brand, it seems that it's still kind of a difficult balance or a balance to consider. And I wonder whether it has shifted over time. Clearly, Swell was or still is a fashion icon, and it's bought for its looks and it's recognized by its looks rather than its logo. But at the same time, it seems that more and more, particularly the young generation, is activist, wants its product to stand for something that has meaning beyond the material, as we often say. It almost seems like what you emphasized at the beginning and then kind of pushed more to the side might become more important today. Do you observe that, or how do you strike the right balance between these two things, or how might you even connect the two, fashion and sustainability?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I think your insight is exactly right. You know, we are now able to talk more and more about sustainability, you know, more so than even 10 years ago when I started the company, and more about the mission. You know, our mission makes us so much more than just the bottle, just the form factor that you see. And, you know, not only is it covetable you know, our fans are really loyal fans, you know, those that younger generation you mentioned. You know, our average Swell customer has 5.5 Swells at home and they're still collecting. You know, to date, you know, we've been able to sell enough product that we conservatively can say that we've offset more than 4 billion single-use plastic water bottles, and we've donated millions of dollars to UNICEF and other organizations to help people get clean water. And people care about those statistics and that piece of the mission, I would say, much more so today than even in those early days. So, you know, even though in the early days I was setting out to do more of, you know, be more light green than dark green and sort of create accidental activists, you know, having people covet and want a product. And by the way, you're doing something good. I think now, and, you know, I think hopefully we've helped create some of this trend. Now we really are allowed to lean back into our early days of our DNA and the mission. And so many people care about sustainability. You know, there's a real groundswell, you know, pun intended, for what we're doing. And we're allowed to really embrace that much more so today than before.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. Now, you talked about your fans. We talk about people, we call them Uber target, that are real fans, that are the drivers of word of mouth, that spread the gospel, they're true disciples of your brand. It seems like you have some of those. What are you doing specifically to keep them happy, to keep the desirability up, to harness them?
You know, because I bootstrap Swell and we've always been very scrappy as a budget, you know, our existence and our success has really been those Uber fans, those super Cars, fans. Yeah. And they spread the story word of mouth. And I think I didn't anticipate that so much when I started the product and the company, you know, that these things, and I'm showing one off. I know I'm on a podcast, you can't see it, but these things walk around in the world. They go to school and the gym and the yoga class, and they express your personality when you put them on a boardroom table. And the neat thing is there's such a connection to, this is why I picked this pattern or color or style, that our fans really told the story word of mouth. And sometimes when they told the story, they talked about the sustainability angle. And sometimes they talked about, you know, bringing clean water to people in Africa for UNICEF. And sometimes they just said, they talked about the functionality of it or the fact that it looked cool. And so everyone, there's so many stories that could be told. Those fans really somehow put Swell into their life in a way that they wanted to tell other people about it. I mean, they were taking pictures and putting them on Instagram. And, you know, I think what we really have done to honor those customers over the years is just really listen to them. You know, when customers came and said, you know, I've actually been putting wine in my Swell bottle and taking it to the park or a music festival, you know, I'm getting away with something. We just said, we're going to meet you exactly where you are. And we're going to make a bigger bottle that holds an entire bottle of wine. You know, when people said, I love my Swell, but next to my Swell, I'm eating out of, you know, a plastic container with my takeout from last night. We spent 2 years coming out on, you know, food containers using our same ThermoSwell technology. So you've got something just as functional and fashion forward, you know, for your lunch as for your beverage. And so, you know, I think we've had a really open, you know, relationship with our customers, but I think, you know, from a product design and development perspective, really just listening to them and making sure that they know that our doors are always open and that we're here to kind of connect with them and make sure that, you know, we're still that scrappy, cool brand that they discovered before. You know, we just might, you know, be in more hands and more homes, but we're still really open to, you know, that feedback.
That's fantastic. And we'll get to that becoming big and what might be the challenges with that. But I love this story about listening to your biggest fans. It reminds me of brands like Glossier and Into the Gloss, and how the blog relates to the brand and back and forth. Or we see this in brands like, let's say, Ben & Jerry's or Patagonia, that have actually four-eye platforms that they create where the biggest fans can exchange ideas, all the way to brands that really have a four-eye, like, for example, Vanguard Investments, that exist completely independent of the brand but are hugely strong. It has over 1,000 posts per day, and this is a mutual fund, okay? So something not really sexy. Do you have platforms that you have created or that you're a member of or part of that where you particularly participate in these conversations, or is it a general kind of social media monitoring that you do?
You know, I think it's a general social media monitoring, but we have a fair number of partnerships that sort of allow us to, I think, be super listeners. I would, you know, highlight a couple of them. We've been partners to the TED conference for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. And, you know, technology, education, design sort of being the forefront of TED. And, you know, those super users, you know, sitting in the front row listening to those TED Talks, giving us, you know, feedback on our products and then carrying them back into their lives, I think has been one. We've just achieved a B Corp status. And, you know, being in a league of other brands that are mission driven and care about the planet and thinking about how do we hold ourselves accountable and to a higher standard, and how do we model ourselves, you know, like you mentioned, the Patagonias of the world, you know, how can we really be listening? We're also members of a group called Sustainable Brands, and, you know, participating in forums and, you know, even just standing in the booth and just talking to people, you know, people will tell us their swell story. You know, they'll pull out a bottle from their bag, and, you know, we've had, you know, a customer that came to us and said, I will never use another bottle because I think this bottle saved my life because I was crossing the road, going to a yoga class, you know, the car bounced off me, my bottle's dented and it saved, you know, but literally just having those conversations. You know, there's a young woman in Canada that has over 30 bottles and has sent us pictures. And when we come out with something new, you know, we send her one, or we ask her advice, like we're trying to decide between these two colors. I think just having that personal connection and that personal touch, you know, makes it that we are still, you know, very accessible, you know, as a brand. Yeah. And it kind of gives us sort of that feedback loop to make sure that we're still, you know, connected to the customer, and we're not, you know, isolated in such a way that we're designing in a silo and we sort of, you know, we miss the mark with, you know, a color, a pattern, or even a new product that's coming out.
I mean, it shows again, we hear this consistently, the power of this Uber target, as we call it. I just had another podcast with Freitag, which makes bags out of truck tarp in Switzerland.
I love them. Yeah.
And we talked about their social media and how people there, you know, go crazy over the product and the exchange, et cetera, and asked them how they created it. And they said, we didn't. The channel was actually created by an early brand fan before Freitag even knew what social media was, and then they agreed with that super fan to make it the official site. And to this day, that super fan is actually the ultimate arbiter of the brand side of Freitag on social media. So,
that's so cool.
Collaboration is incredibly strong. Now, you talked about the growth. I mean, Swell has become omnipresent. Preparing for this interview, I had this Bader-Meinhof kind of effect where I see Swell bottles everywhere in the street and on the tables. And it makes you, you know, conscious how broad and how deep the household penetration is. On the other hand, it's not always a Swell, or it might look like a Swell, or it's not. So I wanted to talk also about the challenges of this growth, about imitation and maybe even your own brand extension. But before we go there, we'll take a few seconds of break and come back right after these Uber brand messages.
Well, this is exciting. You are still with us, and we take this as a sign that you find this episode interesting. It's really this shared interest in what drives successful premium brands, what elevates them, which keeps us going as well. And as you will have noticed, we're not advertising on this side. We're not making any money thus from it. But there is nevertheless a way you can help us keep up the work if you think it's good. And that's simply by taking a few seconds or maybe 2 minutes to go over to your Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, or whatever app you listen this from, and hit the 5 stars on the rating. If you feel like it, you might even want to add a good comment to it. And that in turn will make sure that our podcast is actually findable on search, or who knows, even pops up in the recommended podcast, which would obviously be terrific. It makes a big difference to us. maybe it's a small change for you. Sounds very historic. Also, if you really want to dig deeper into the subject of how Uber brands function and work, then we encourage you to buy our book, Rethinking Prestige Branding, in which we lay out and examine in detail the 7 drivers of premium brand success, together with a ton of examples and good dozen case studies. Or if you want a very hands-on how-to step-by-step guide on how to create an Uber brand, then buy our book, Brand Elevation. It's brand new. You can find it on Amazon and all fine stores. And here we lay out in very practical terms what you can do and how much time and money and cost and effort it takes to create an Uber brand. So enough of the internal advertisement, but I hope you can help, and we'll go back to our interview.
All right, welcome back. We're talking to Sarah Kaus today, founder and chairwoman of Swell. And I was just saying, you've been so successful, you're growing, and it's incredible, and Swell seems to be omnipresent. But what we find also is that's often, or it becomes often, a challenge for brands that want to be different, desirable, that want to be Uber brands. Have you experienced that? How do you deal with Swell showing up everywhere and maybe a lot of lookalikes also?
We deal with it in a few different ways. You know, some people say it's really a sign of your success that so many people want to imitate you. And, yes. You know, in some ways you can look at it if, you know, the mission of Swell is to try to have everyone on the planet use a reusable drinking vessel and not single-use plastic, then, you know, we've succeeded. But, you know, being recognized, you know, for, you know, not just our brand, but actually having, you know, created the form factor of the Swell bottle, you know, it makes Swell iconic, but it also has its incredible drawbacks. If customers are confusing a fake Swell or a counterfeit Swell or a knockoff Swell, however you want to say it, with a real one, you know, it leads to confusion in the marketplace. It can lead to, you know, less than stellar experiences, you know, from customers contacting our customer service saying, hey, I bought this bottle, the paint is peeling, it's leaking, it's whatever. And we ask them to send us a picture and we have to say, we're so sorry, but you don't actually have an authentic product, you know? So it's challenging in that, yes, we are trying to get everyone off of the single use plastics, but because there's so many, you know, competitors that have rushed into the space, they might not be doing the, you know, the rigorous, you know, supply chain vetting, you know, the quality assurance testing, you know, any of those types of things that Swell does to make sure that every product is, you know, meeting our standards. I think that's what's so challenging for us as a brand. You know, we've really tried over the last couple of years to combat that in a few ways. Some of it is really just telling the story, you know, having an authenticity page on our website or on Amazon so customers can educate themselves about what is a real Swell, how do you make sure. And then some of it is, you know, unfortunately, just on the legal side. You know, we register every print and pattern for IP. We register every form factor and new product that comes out. You know, we spend a lot of money on legal and enforcement and action, and all of that time and energy should be spent on new product development and right. Should be spent, you know, on ways that are more additive to the brand, but it's almost a necessary evil. You know, as soon as you're successful, you know, you're going to have people come in and, right. And try to co-op what you've done. So, you know, it breaks my heart on how much we've spent on it. I always try to say we're going to do less legal, but, you know, it's just something that comes with the territory.
Now, the very recognizable parts of Swell, which is this, unique or not, shape, which is your shape and your stainless steel kind of cap with the indentures, mm-hmm. etc. Is that IP protected and protectable or not?
It is. So we actually have design patents exactly on that iconic Swell shape, you know, along with everything else. You know, I think we're up to, I don't know, 20, mm-hmm. 20 different form factors at this point. Those are all protectable. And, you know, I like to say that it's almost like that arcade game of whack-a-mole sometimes. You know, you infringe upon our IP, we send a letter, you know, we go right. To court and you get involved and, you know, we clean up the marketplace and then you turn around and 3 more pop up. So we've actually right. found that it's really successful for us to do some training either at our retail stores or even with Customs and Border Patrol, where we've been very successful for saying, this is our IP portfolio, this is our product catalog, just don't let any of this stuff come in the US. Mm-hmm. And we've been really successful in just sort of stopping the import of those goods.
Now, the logo is not very noticeable on Swell products. Is that on purpose? Why don't you leverage this also against counterfeits, or do you just find it's useless because the logo is also being copied?
You know, we haven't found the logo being copied as much, although we have found it. But we found, you know, the logo is engraved, laser engraved on the front of all of our products. But really, we didn't want it to be so overwhelming of a logo because we wanted the product to sort of stand on its own. You know, we do some co-branding with some other brands, and sometimes we'll help put their logo on the product too. But we always try to tone it down a little. Like, we are a, you know, a premium product.
Right.
And we want to make sure that people know that they have a real Swell, and that they, you know, oftentimes they want other people to know they have a real Swell. But we didn't want to be so branded that it's actually taking away from the very beautiful and streamlined look of the product.
Right, right. Now, Tonga, so definitely makes sense for premium products. We find at Bottega Veneta, you know, it's the weave. You don't need to put a logo on it. That makes total sense. On the other hand, we also find that you try to manage things like affordability. There is a more affordable line. I think it's called Sip by Swell. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
And you do a lot of corporate tie-ins. Now, that can be dicey for a brand, because consumers then obviously ask, well, what's the difference between that lower-end product and that higher-end product? And also the corporations kind of taking over pieces of equity by printing their things. How do you try to manage that? I talked to Winston Stanley at Patagonia just when they decided no longer to do vest for investment bankers, if you remember that episode.
I do.
Which became so fashionable on Wall Street. You know, when, I don't know, a cigarette company wants to put their logo on Swell, do you have rules? And how do you manage this kind of potential equity conflicts?
Sure. You know, our corporate business and our custom business has actually been a really wonderful avenue for driving brand awareness and building the business. So you might receive a Swell bottle, you know, at your place of work or at a conference for the first time, and you're exposed to the brand. And what we anecdotally hear from customers is then they go to the website and they realize we have all these other range of products. Or even better, hey, I took that bottle home and my son or daughter stole it from me, took it to school, and now I need to become a customer, you know, of my own. But we are very careful about the brands we partner with. You know, you mentioned a cigarette company. We certainly wouldn't work with a company that doesn't meet our mission and our values. So we carefully review any brand that wants to work with us, you know, what their logo is, how they're going to be using the product, how it's going to be distributed. It certainly has, you know, limited, you know, either speed to market or even the size of that market. But we also want to make sure we're being really, you know, honest and pure to our brand. Being a mission-driven company, you have to be careful that someone isn't going to come in and try to co-op your brand. And, you know, everything that we've stood for and you know, somehow do some greenwashing and say, oh, we're doing this over here, but don't worry, we're working with Swell over there. So we've actually been pretty careful about it. But, you know, I would say, you know, I always applaud Patagonia. I mean, they set the gold standard for so much of what they do. But for us, you know, our corporate business has actually been really quite beneficial.
Right, right. And what about the line extension down? Do you find it difficult to manage those two, or what effect does it have on the brand in your experience?
You know, we created Sip by Swell as sort of the starter brands, more of a mastige. We launched it in Target. As you mentioned, the price point is a little bit more accessible. The patterns are more fun and playful, where, you know, we might do, you know, poodles or donuts, you know, versus a teak wood or a marble or something we would do on Swell.
More, exactly.
But the funny thing that we learned about Swell is that Sip by Swell actually oftentimes is crossing over, that customers will already be Swell customers, and they'll want Sip because of the playful patterns, or they might just want an additional one for their gym bag or their kids that, you know, oftentimes lose these things at school, that it isn't just that I'm a sit person or a swell person. There's actually a part of our portfolio that you might want, you know, a different form factor, different price point, different pattern for your model. So we've actually seen a lot more crossover within families or even within individuals actually owning and using both products. So it really hasn't been hard to manage. And again, it's interesting that, you know, people think about swell and sip sometimes interchangeably, and we're okay with that.
So this is kind of the vertical extension up and down the price tiers. Horizontally, you want to go and get beyond the bottle, was our understanding when we worked our little projects with the students. You have containers that hold food, as you explained also, to kind of supply the entire picnic gear, if you like. How are you approaching this? How are you trying to make the brand go beyond the bottle? Even rhymes. Mm-hmm. Because it seems to me like Patagonia, for example, since we both consider it a gold standard, has become so much bigger than a fleece sweater, which certainly is still the iconic quintessential Patagonia product. But mm-hmm. I would argue that Patagonia almost has gone beyond the product. It's an ideology, it's a philosophy, it's a way of life. And so they can expand right now into provisions, which is food, which has nothing to do with their fleece sweaters. Do you have such a vision? Where do you see this brand being in 10 years from now? And where do you see you and your role with the brand to kind of finish us off? We already ran over time.
Oh, well, that's probably my fault. I'm a talker.
Interesting.
Thank you for those questions. You know, I thank you for saying that. I do believe that Swell stands for so much more than the bottle. You know, those that know us know that we stand for sustainable living and actions for good and taking our care of ourselves and our planet and our communities. You know, over the next, you know, 10 years, we're really going to be doubling down on sustainability and bringing our consumers along for the ride. You know, we talked a little bit about our B Corp status, but, you know, we're continuing to find ways to integrate sustainability into everything we do. Our partnerships, that corporate channel I talked about, and really looking at sustainable, not just through products, but through service. And when I say service, what I'm talking about is coming up with new ways to consume and partner with some of the biggest companies in the world as they're putting out these really large sustainability goals. And so Swell has become the best known reusable container, period.
Interesting.
And there's a lot of big companies that are getting either pressure from their customers or stakeholders, or their leadership are putting out these very big goals for the years in the future about recyclability or reusability, but they're not really sure how to do it. So we've been very fortunate that some of the biggest companies in the world have been calling us and saying, we love what you did with the Swell bottle. We loved how you changed consumer behavior. How can you help us think about this beverage, this food product, this whatever that would go into a container, and how do we make it cool and hip for people to reuse?
That makes total sense. We talked to Tom Zaki of TerraCycle and the whole Loop project.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
And it's this whole push. Everyone wants to try and find ways to make it reusable. Excellent. And then where do you see the brand and yourself?
You know, I actually just hired a professional CEO to come in and quote unquote replace me, although I think I'll always be all over very opinionated at Swell.
Can't let go.
I'm that kind of founder. You know, Swell is my first child, so I'll always be its parent. But where I really want to put my time and energy in the next 10 years and the decades after that is on this, you know, sustainability piece. You know, I don't need to necessarily be running Swell from a day-to-day perspective. You know, I find that my value really should be on the outside of the company, looking out and thinking about partnerships and thinking about new products, not really internal, looking at spreadsheets, approving payroll, you know, answering 10,000 emails. And, you know, not that I didn't find that fulfilling over the last 10 years. I'm really proud of the work that I did at Swell, but I think I'm really ready to kind of leave the day-to-day, you know, management piece to someone else who's excited about doing that with a lot of experience, so I can unleash myself into the world to think about bigger ideas.
And again, very consistent. You think of the Lego, the family that owns Lego and top management, joining actually the foundation that's all about education and leaving the business over to professionals. So I see a lot of parallels here of Swell shaping up to be a great Uber brand case study overall. Sarah, we've run out of time. You know, time flies when you're having fun. I want to ask you though, if people want to know more about Swell, what it's all about, its philosophy and its products, what's the best place to go?
Well, of course, I have to say swell.com. But we do have some blog pages, and we try to use that as a resource for education. So I would definitely say just check out the website.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for all your time and insights. It was really a pleasure. And thanks to you, of course, dear listeners. You can always reach us at info@uberbrands.com. And that's written with a U-E, as it should be. If you like this podcast, then please tell everyone, your friends, your colleagues about it. Like us, subscribe, you know the spiel. And with that, I hope you will listen again next time. And thanks again, Sarah, for the interview.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye-bye. Auf Wiedersehen.